Living off the land, surviving in the jungle, making bombs and getting into gun battles? Does this sound like a Hollywood blockbuster? As our contributing reporter, Manuel Rueda, writes today, it's the life for hundreds of soldiers from Colombia, thousands of miles away from home. Over the past decade, the United Nations found an estimated 10,000 Colombian ex-fighters have turned mercenary, lured by promises of wealth to take up arms in Ukraine, Mexico, and across Africa. Many never return. It's Wednesday, May 6th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Ira Porter. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. The U.S. said the ceasefire with Iran isn't over. It's still in effect, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said on Tuesday. Iran has launched cruise missiles, drones, and speedboat attacks against U.S. forces defending commercial ships as part of an effort dubbed Project Freedom to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. It's low, harassing fire right now. It feels like Iran is grasping at straws, Air Force General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, added during the Pentagon briefing. Though these actions remain beneath the threshold of violating the ceasefire, we would urge Iran to be prudent, Mr. Hegseth said. Rival ceasefire schemes emerge from Russia and Ukraine. Vladimir Putin called for a two-day truce with Ukraine that would mark this weekend's anniversary of the Soviet victory over Nazi Germany. The Kremlin has already scaled back the traditional military parade on Red Square, which Ukraine has called a legitimate target, over fears of drone attacks. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky dismissed the Russian proposal as a theatrical performance and countered with his own plan for an open-ended ceasefire to begin May 6. There has been no official Russian response, but the defense ministry warned of massive retaliation against Kyiv if Moscow's parade is disrupted. Also, the Cuban government published new migration and citizenship laws. Part of a broader update to the country's legal framework, the regulations replace codes dating back to the 1970s and include changes that could strengthen ties with the Cuban diaspora. It's now legal to hold dual citizenship. Several new migratory categories have been created, including humanitarian resident and investors and businesses status, allowing Cubans living abroad to participate in the Cuban economy. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, whose parents came to the U.S. from Cuba, has demanded that Cuba enact comprehensive political and economic reforms and said the communist nation needs new people in charge. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. Congress may now put $1 billion toward the White House Ballroom Project, which has so far been funded through private donations. It reflects President Donald Trump's effort to leave a physical legacy as well as meet a genuine need. Linda Feldman reports from Washington for The Monitor. Even though high-profile immigration operations in U.S. cities have eased, President Donald Trump's border czar says the administration is hiring more deportation officers and will not give an inch. Sarah Matusik reports for The Monitor. As the global economy feels the impact from a disruption of shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, both the U.S. and Iran claim they control the waterway. America's efforts to open the lanes, coming amid the Iran war, are meeting steep challenges. Victoria Hoffman and Caitlin Babcock report for The Monitor. Every year, Colombia retires thousands of battle-hardened veterans from its armed forces. Many end up enlisting in foreign conflicts, including the front lines of Ukraine. Contributor Manuel Rueda reports from Bogota, Colombia, for The Monitor. The cost of food is rising quickly in Senegal. Nowhere is this more evident than the price of the country's national dish, cheboujin. Contributor Adrian Marout reports from Dakar, Senegal, for The Monitor. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on redistricting without partisanship. In the weeks since the Supreme Court barred gerrymandering of districts intentionally based on race, many state legislatures have been busy debating how to redraw electoral maps. Some lawmakers have offered non-race-based ideas, including proportional representation, to ensure all disadvantaged voters have a voice. Such ideas, however, might first entail a dialogue, both across the aisle and across races. In Alabama, one legislator, Representative Curtis Travis, offered a different kind of dialogue Monday. In an opening prayer at a statehouse session on redistricting, he asked Eternal God for his wisdom. Here is part of that prayer. As this House considers matters that shape representation and influence the future of communities across our state, we ask for your steadying hand. Today, as lines are considered and decisions are weighed, grant wisdom that is not partisan but principled. Grant all of us clarity of mind, humility of spirit, and a commitment to fairness that rises above pressure, preference, or partisanship. Grant courage that is not self-serving but just. Grant discernment that sees every citizen not as a number on a map, but as a soul created in your image, worthy of dignity and fair representation. He then asks this for his fellow lawmakers of all parties. Bless each representative with courage, patience, and discernment for the work ahead. In the United States, over its 250 years, prayers like that have often helped diffuse tensions in race relations. In many statehouses now, however, the discourse is largely defensive and retaliatory, seeking partisan electoral advantage. Yet many Americans might be looking for what inter-race facilitators call bridging. In their 2024 book, Belonging Without Othering, John A. Powell and Stephen Menendian of the University of California, Berkeley wrote that ways to link people across racial or religious divides can be as simple as an interfaith dinner or a multicultural concert. Active and empathetic listening is perceived and felt as a form of caring and regard, and it builds trust, the authors wrote. Remarkably, it may have a greater tendency to induce change or shift opinion than listening for purpose of persuasion, to change a person's opinion. Such mutual recognition, they add, can help reduce the kind of zero-sum competition found in neighborhoods, schools, workplaces, and politics. In his prayer, Representative Travis conveyed a similar note. Where there is division, bring clarity. Where there is pressure, bring integrity. Where there is uncertainty, bring reverence for what is right. Taking a moment for prayer in the Alabama Statehouse, he later wrote on Facebook, is a reminder that leadership carries weight grounded in reflection, humility, and a sense of service to something greater than ourselves. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how whatever challenge we're facing, no matter the size, we can trust God to give us the spiritual ideas that supply what we need. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Noel Flatt, Mackenzie Farkas, and Audrey Thieme.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2026.